Rude.
I was like, you're used to the capitalism labor towards death. So like, why would this be any different? Oh, leftover makeup.
Leftover makeup. That mascara I use sometimes just doesn't want to come off all the way. That's all.
So then you get like, not quite raccoon eyes, but like, not quite like, yeah, you just get like this like weird in between thing that you have currently. Yeah.
It's like all smudgy. I look like emo kids that, you know, do the thing where they like smudge their eyeliner underneath their eyes and then go to school the next morning. That after concert look.
You mean our like entire middle school look?
Yeah.
I was never good at being an emo kid for that realm because I would always get, when I would try to do my eyeliner, I would get caught in like the groove under my eye. So instead of like following my eye, it would be like that like crease underneath.
That's okay. That's in these days.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
I know. You're just too ahead of your times, Gabe.
Hot pot of the South, not your daddy's Appalachia. Hot pot of the South, progress cannot wait.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pot of the South, a production of Change Tennessee. Pull up a chair and refill your sweet tea as we peel back the layers of Southern politics to get a better understanding of what's going on and why it matters. My name is Gabe, and joining me today, as always, is Knoxville's gayest forger of shiny math rocks, Maggie Loveday.
What's up, everyone?
Today, we actually don't have a guest. I'm pretty sure people are now starting to catch on to what we're about here and don't want to affiliate with a lovely third-rate podcast. Can't really blame them, but we're going to keep on keeping on because that's what you do. Today, we don't have a big overarching topic that we're going to go into. We're going to kind of just every now and then kind of talk about what's going on in the grand scheme of things. So for that, we're going to kind of hit on three big topics today that everybody's talking about. The big one that is on everybody's mind right now is the withdrawal from Afghanistan and finally ending the forever war. We're also going to dive into the $550 billion infrastructure deal that has passed and we're expecting to be finalized any day now. And the last thing we're going to kind of dive into a little bit today is also the latest Voting Rights Act, the John Lewis Voting Rights Act that has passed the House on along party lines. So we're going to kind of dive into those three things today and kind of keep you guys up to date on what's going on. But before we jump into all that, Maggie, do you have a spotlight for us? You know, something that's kind of been on your mind that you don't think people are talking about really?
So for my random shower thoughts of the week, are you ready for this? I actually had a conversation about this the other day at work because one of my coworkers accidentally said sitting Indian style, which, you know, nowadays is not PC and we say crisscross applesauce. Because it's easy for kids to remember something that rhymes. So that's why they did crisscross applesauce. But my thought was, how the hell did everyone sit before they colonized the Americas?
Cross-legged? I don't know.
We only sat completely different. So I want to know, for everyone out there that might know, how did colonizers sit before they, you know, came to the Americas and they were like, ah, yes, Indian style. That's how we're going to sit from now on.
Well, I think you either sat in a throne or you never sat because you were being exploited and had to stand at the mill all day until you died.
That's true. Or did you like stand bow-legged because you were always on your high horse?
I think that's it. So they kind of just like owed into the ground and like a ring, like the human body was just like a ring pop.
Exactly. The other favorite one was like, all right, so if we say that sitting cross-legged on the ground is Indian style, okay, but when you're kneeling on the ground, why don't we call it Japanese style? Because, no, we just say we're kneeling on the ground.
The Japanese were, well, they were imperialists, not really colonizers, so. But we still like empire. We're still a huge fan of empire, and empire's got to respect empire. So I think that's why they don't get a racist caricature of their sitting style.
Who are too savage. So that's why they sit on the ground. They don't sit in chairs. They sit on the ground. That's what it is. I see now. We only sat in chairs. We never sat on the ground.
If you just would have put a blanket down in between, it could have all been avoided.
Who knew?
Such a simple thing as a piece of cloth could have separated you from a savage that needed to be converted or killed or anything.
That's funny too, because we usually sat on hides, like buffalo rolls.
White people suck. Like, let's just chalk it up to like white people suck.
So that's my shower thought. There you go. Because he was like, yeah, he likes to sit Indian style. Wait, no. Hold on. That's not PC. I'm sorry. Crisscross applesauce. And I was like, how did white people sit before they colonized the United States? That's all I want to know. So if you all have the answer, just tweet it at me, please. All right, Gabe, what's your spotlight?
It's very new. It popped up today. It was all over the Twitterverse. Are you a big fan of Nirvana, Maggie?
Oh, yeah. I like Nirvana, especially their drummer. They look oddly like that lead singer for that other band.
The guy who's on the cover of their, I already forgot the name of the album, the Naked Baby, he apparently is not that big of a fan of Nirvana anymore and is suing Dave Grohl, that beautiful, beautiful drummer, for at least 10 different articles that he is filing a lawsuit against. And they all revolve around sexual exploitation of a minor. Exactly. And some of these are just the most outrageous claims that they're trying to sue over. Defendants reproduced child pornography depicting Spencer, knowing and intending that it would be distributed internationally and that they would receive value from such widespread worldwide distribution. Despite this knowledge, defendants failed to take reasonable steps to protect Spencer and prevent his widespread sexual exploitation and image trafficking. Oh, and here's one of my favorites. As a result of the above, Spencer has suffered and will continue to suffer lifelong damages. His embarrassing naked baby photo is probably one of the most popular images in the world.
Whatever. Like, what did he do with his life anyways? Like, after that?
Based on this, it sounds like he might have gone, like, crazy cute, thinking that, like, an embarrassing photo of you as a naked baby is the exact same thing as child sexual exploitation.
At that point, then we could all sue our parents for awful naked baby photos.
Yes, that's the most insane thing about this. He has grounds for a lawsuit against them. And it's the fact that they paid him $200. Like, they paid his parents or his family $200 for this photo.
So did he never get royalties from the photo for every record sold?
I believe so, yeah. There's grounds for, like, trying to, like, get some compensation back for that, because like you kind of got screwed over on an album that was getting a major record release and you got paid pennies. But this shit about sex trafficking and like sexual exploitation,
it sounds like buzzwords. Like, he's just trying to use buzzwords to be able to get more clout. You know what I mean? But that also diminishes the amount of families and people that are actually have to deal with sex trafficking and sexual exploitation of a minor.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like some Q shit. The grounds on which they're filing a lawsuit is the dumbest thing. Literally every American has at least one photo of them, at least one photo of them as a naked baby that their parents pull out every time a new partner comes over and they meet the parents for the first time. You're like, oh, look at Maggie. Look at Gabe. Like,
oh, I ran around naked constantly as a child. So there's so many naked baby photos of me. They're actually quite hysterical.
Spencer, you're an idiot. Internet bullies, internet trolls, get after them. This is incitement. Trump may not know what incitement is, but I do. And let's get after him. Fuck this guy. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dive right into the meat and potatoes for the day. Our favorite benefactor, Charles Koch, knows how to stay in the loop even when he's not actively playing a role in the ongoing discussion. Through his massive network of dark money organizations, he keeps his hands dirty with all the terrible things the reactionary right has to offer. Charles Koch, I'm still here, even if you don't see me. Thank you for tuning in today. And to launch our conversation for today, as we were kind of talking about earlier, we're going to talk about Afghanistan, the Voting Rights Act, and the infrastructure deal. But we're going to start off with kind of the big one that everybody's talking about, and that is Biden finally ending the forever war in Afghanistan. It was, what, within 2 weeks of the final U.S. Troops withdrawals, Taliban took over like the entire country, kind of ending with Kabul, the capital, falling to the Taliban, and it has immediately gone into a Taliban-led state. That's made him a lightning rod for a lot of criticism from both sides. Both Democrats and Republicans could not wait to get after him and criticize the Biden administration for this quote-unquote failed withdrawal from Afghanistan. Maggie, I kind of just want to get your thoughts on kind of how it's been going so far.
I mean, it's just, this whole thing has been a clusterfuck. Like, I mean, this has been going on for the past 20 years. There are children that have never lived a life where we were not stationed in Afghanistan. And so, like, I mean, honestly, I don't think we should have been there in the first place. Like, it's not our job to be international police. I mean, like, backing out of Afghanistan and then the Taliban taking over, and it was going to happen. Like, that's exactly what was going to happen, because when you create a power void, essentially, like, you mess with other countries and you create this, like, power suck, because when you leave, of course, something else is going to go in, right?
Especially when you don't do anything to build up said area.
No, it's like you didn't do any work. You just stood there and waited to see what was going to happen.
And bombed the shit out of everybody.
And killed so many civilians, so many kids.
Yeah, over the course of like the 20-year quagmire that the war in Afghanistan and the war against terror has been, we spent $2.23 trillion approximately. $2.23 trillion. What the fuck was that money going to? I mean, we know what it was going to. It was going to Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, the RAND Corporation. I mean, all these defense contractors and shit like that. And then Afghani warlords. Like, we weren't actually doing anything to build the infrastructure of Afghanistan. So, of course, the moment we withdraw, shit's going to hit the fan. And what I also love about this is all these people that are like jumping to criticize the Biden administration for this, like he failed, everyone. Trump negotiated this. Biden was literally just picking up the ball that he was given and ran with it.
Yep. My other favorite part is people blaming Biden and Obama for the Taliban taking over. But the person that started the war was George W. Bush. I would like everyone to get this correct, that neither of those presidents started the war, okay? It was George W. Bush. Give him the credit that he is due. That poor man has not gotten much in life.
He has gotten a DUI, but yeah, absolutely. Probably the most consequential president of the past 50 years. The Bush administration, probably the most consequential presidencies of our time. Because of that.
The amount of impact that it's had on Afghanistan, just Afghanistan, is of course inconsequential. I mean, we cannot measure the amount of impact that we've had on that country and the amount of lives that we've taken and the amount of lives that we've destroyed. But you also have to think about the American lives that you've destroyed, because there are thousands on thousands upon men and women that are dealing with PTSD because of what they did in Afghanistan. Things that they shouldn't have been doing in the first place.
Eddie Gallagher, like the fucking Navy SEAL who Trump pardoned, was literally just doing some mass murder because he felt like it, because he was batshit insane.
It gave a lot of excuses for people that were insane to go over and just have a heyday.
What, it was like all the Blackwater mercenaries that Trump pardoned for committing war crimes. We allow these people to commit war crimes. And we're just like, well, they're fighting the terrorists. Was the 7-year-old a terrorist? Was like the grandmother a terrorist?
They may have believed that we were wrong in what we were doing, which we were. And that's what made them a terrorist. They weren't with us, so they're against us.
For us, like we did our formative years. I mean, I was in like fourth grade when 9/11 happened, if I'm mathing correctly. I was like fourth or fifth grade. And literally, if you were a Middle Easterner, you were a terrorist.
I mean, we're not fully out yet, and that's also been a controversy. Like, they want parts of the army to stay there a little longer so that they can evacuate more people. But, like, we're not going to take any more refugees, so they have to be Americans that are evacuating.
Which, that's another thing. Like, yeah, we destroyed this country and, like, put literally anyone who even talked to us's lives in danger. And then are capping the refugee count at, like, what, 17,000, something like that? When there's literally hundreds of thousands of people whose lives are now in danger because they gave a soldier a cup of water. You know, there's so many people whose lives are in danger because they associated with the American troops. And we're just going to be like, oh, nope, sorry.
I don't even know how many people are seeking evacuation. Like, they don't even have that number. And it's estimated that there's going to be at least 300,000 Afghans that are in danger of being targeted by the Taliban that need to become refugees. And if you guys want to see some, like, really, really raw photos of what's happening in the Taliban, like with the Taliban takeover in Afghanistan, my cousin is one of the photographers he's like a New York Times photographer, but he also does photos for Washington Post and stuff like that. His name is Victor Blue, and you can find him on Instagram. You definitely should go follow him to see some of the photos of what's happening. He's been stationed on and off again in Afghanistan taking photographs of what's been happening for the past 20 years there. But some of the photos that he's been posting over the past few days have been, it's insane to see the resemblance of what happened on January 6th during the insurrection to what is happening with the Taliban takeover. Those photos are one and the same. You put them next to each other, they are the same photos. I shit you not. Because he was also there on January 6th.
We did it. I mean, we made all of this possible because of how much we bungled everything.
It's just Colombia all over again. It's just South America in general, Panama, like any of the rural South American countries. It's just this all over again. If you guys paid attention to American history and U.S. history and then world history for the past 40 years, we done fucked up again, okay?
Anytime the U.S. says it's going to do some nation building, just run. Run as fast as you can, because they're not going to do much nation building. They're going to do a bunch of nation blowing up.
Yeah, and they're not even helping build the countries up that they're sticking their fingers in. They could be helping them create a budget, creating actual, like, dumb government processes that we have that don't work, but they could also try and see if those would work for them. I mean, there's so many things that as the United States, if they wanted to try and do better and better other parts of the world, they could. I mean, there are parts of the U.S. that are great. There are parts of the U.S. that suck. Just take the parts that are good and try to help others. Stop trying to take the parts that are bad, aka the colonization, ignorance, and just continuing to push that on everyone else in the world.
I'm pretty sure we could both just keep yelling about U.S. imperialism and how awful it is and its long history of being the absolute worst, probably all night. But, you know, we did kind of talk a little bit about how we were really good at blowing up the Middle East's infrastructure. We're going to kind of talk about how we're going to try to rebuild our infrastructure after we've let capitalism spend the last 40 years pretty much blowing it up. And by that, I mean it finally passed the $550 billion infrastructure deal, with a caveat that there will be a $3.5 trillion budget deal come September. This infrastructure deal is pretty big. I mean, there's a lot in there about moving us closer to green energy and a little bit kind of stuff very akin to the Green New Deal. There's stuff about broadband expansion. And so there's a lot of really good stuff in here. But what do these numbers mean? I mean, of all the stuff I've read so far, like, there hasn't been anybody, any news outlets that have really gotten down into it and broken out. What does $68 billion for broadband internet really mean? You know, it feels like these numbers are just kind of made up, that they're just like reaching into a hat and pulling shit out, because, like, we cannot fathom what $68 billion. We cannot fathom what $110 billion or $550 billion. Like, I don't know what that does. Like, so this is awesome that they're doing it, but until we really understand what this means, what does this actually mean for us Americans?
It's insane. Like, the numbers you see are just dumb. Where is this money coming from? First of all, this is my favorite part. Okay. So, like, say we're doing an infrastructure deal, right? Why isn't healthcare a part of our infrastructure deal? Why isn't that a part of it? What is stopping it from being a part of it? And why is it that those numbers count, but when you try to look at other numbers, like say for healthcare for all or getting rid of student debt, suddenly those numbers are too big and we can't do it. So like, what, where are the numbers coming from? I would like some economics professor to please contact me and tell me, walk me through everything. I'm sure it'll take years, but you know, eventually I'll get there so I can understand where the hell all the money is coming from, because it's not clear. And like with any other nonprofit, at the end of the year, you're supposed to like share a, this is how much we spent and this is what it was budget wise and blah, blah, blah. Why don't we get that as the United States? Can we please have that?
Well, you do. You just have to get 18 different FOIA requests, wait 7 months, pay probably, you know, $80 in fees. And then you'll get the information once you have like an accountant sit down with you, which is going to cost you like another $4,000 to go through everything.
That's not okay. We need to have more clear of what's happening with the United States budget and where all the money's coming from, where all the money's going.
This is the $550 billion deal. But then, like I said, the September deal, the which would be the budget reconciliation that Biden gets two of this year because he was a new elector, and then he gets his normal one. That'll be $3.5 trillion. And that will have some of the things in it that you're talking about. Like a big part of that, that the progressive push is to have in the Affordable Care Act to expand upon that by adding dental and vision to it.
They're supposed to be adding that. There's more care coverage for it. So like, for all of you that don't understand what care coverage is, it's for caretakers. So people that, you know, it's taking care of the elderly. I wish they would talk about disabled folks' minimum wage and the amount of money they can have in their bank accounts, but that's probably not going to happen for another 5 years. But anyways, I digress. So the care coverage that's going to be happening, that's going to be awesome. That's really good. It needs to happen. It also covers like preschools and stuff like that. But it's $3.5 trillion that we're trying to aim for. Cool. How much money have we put into the military in the past year?
Well, in the past 20 years, we've put about, at the very minimum, $2.23 trillion itself. Their infrastructure is great.
That infrastructure for the military is awesome. Can we focus on some of us regular folks now? Like, is that okay or is that not okay?
You know, we've talked a lot about kind of like, you know, what does all this mean? And I'm just going to throw the figures out here that are kind of broken down. Again, this money is just made up. It makes no sense without actually having anybody break down what all of this means at a local or statewide level. For roads and bridges, there's going to be $110 billion in new funding. For road safety, there is going to be $11 billion.
All right. What's road safety, though? Are we talking about state troopers? All right, cool. That one's fine. No more money for the cops, please.
More signs to steal, though. More stop signs to steal. Public transit will have $39 billion to modernize public transit. And this article specifically on CNBC specifically calls out improve access for people with disabilities. And then there's passenger and freight rail, which is getting $66 billion, which will be great. I mean, trains, like, we're such a huge country. Like, literally everywhere else in the world utilizes train and freight. Electric vehicles and buses, there's going to be $15 billion to that.
That's probably like charging stations.
Airports, ports, and waterways are getting only in towards ports and waterways and 25 or $17 billion towards ports and waterways and $25 billion to airports. $50 billion for water infrastructure, which is directly like targeted towards climate change fueled disasters like the droughts and floods that are happening in Tennessee right now.
Middle Tennessee is kind of underwater right now.
$55 billion for clean water. So, you know, 15 years later, Flint will actually be able to drink the water that comes out of their sinks. $65 billion for high-speed internet, $1 billion for environmental cleanup. So you kind of seeing a trend here that there's a lot of environmental stuff because climate change will kill us all, like if we don't target it. And this is a great start.
Interesting, because like I had a conversation with someone the other day at my work. Of course, this person voted for Trump. And so they're having a conversation with me about what Trump was doing. And the biggest thing that they were talking about that they were concerned with was that, you know, everybody needs to work for what they're going to get. Everyone to work for what they're going to get. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps and do it yourself if you want something, right? You got to care for people. Like, what do you mean you want everyone to get like work for what they're going to get? You can't, like, there are people in our areas that can't do that. And so infrastructure wise, we're doing really good. We're doing good, but we need to do better. There's more that we need to do to take care of the people that can't take care of themselves right now. And I don't mean that 25-year-old autistic guy can't take care of himself. He can take care of himself, but he can't do it fully by himself. He needs help.
We can't really move forward if we don't take care of the human infrastructure. Roads, bridges, waterways, airports, that's great. That helps out, makes it easier for people to get around, safer roads.
Yeah, we need those anyways. That was something that we needed to start improving upon 15 years ago, and that was obviously not taken care of.
But if we continue to ignore the human infrastructure, the things that actually make roads worth having, like you can have the most beautiful roads in the world, but if no one's there to drive on them because they're all sick or dead or whatever, like fucking good doesn't do. Like this infrastructure bill doesn't go far enough. We need a massive overhaul on the human infrastructure and the medical infrastructure of our country as well.
When I talk to folks like that, like I have conversations with them, they get it. They're like, yeah, no, I want to help those people, but I don't want to help the lazy people. I'm like, well, have you ever thought about the fact that those lazy people have disabilities that they can't get approved for disability yet? Have you thought about the fact that they're extremely mentally ill and they don't have access to mental health care that they need in order to be able to be a functioning human being? And he was like, well, yeah, I want to help those people. And I was like, that's everyone in the South. I just listed everyone in the South. Like, you want to help them, but you don't want to just give it to them. But they need something given to them in order for them to be able to be functioning human beings.
You said you were talking to a Trump supporter about this, but I think you're really talking to like a 1990s Democrat. This sounds like a big old Clinton supporter that you were actually talking to. Yeah, so our infrastructure needs a lot. And hopefully this $550 billion will get the ball rolling.
Deeper conversations about what our infrastructure does, like what is in our infrastructure as America, as the United States of America, what is our infrastructure and how is it helping you and your neighbor? Because let's talk about this. It doesn't need to be just you. It also needs to be the people around you. If you're going to complain about the potholes on the interstate, but not give a crap about the senior citizens that are being abused down the street from you, there's an issue there.
Right. You don't care about infrastructure. You're just selfish as hell.
Do you know what really helps your infrastructure, though? Gerrymandering and voting rights.
It does, because when you can say only these areas, only this district will get the funding, you can guarantee that you're going to want to be in that district, and they will make sure that only the affluent white people are in said neighborhood. But yeah, so that is a great segue, Maggie, into our final topic of the day.
I think so, Troy.
Which will be on the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, or at least the version that just passed the House, completely along party lines. And we've done an episode in the past about the Voting Rights Act and why it needs to go.
Why it's important. What parts of it are important, but what's the most important part about the Voting Rights Act? It's getting it passed.
It literally benefits everybody. It reinstitutes the felons the rights to vote so long as they're paid up on all of their fees. Here in Tennessee, we're super white, and there's a lot of felons who are felons because of opiate addiction. So just throwing it out there that maybe some of those felons probably on both sides of the aisle. I mean, you know, this is not a one party over the other. It's an everybody thing. Automatic voter registration at 18, where you're just, boom, you turn 18. Congratulations, you can vote.
Do you know how many times I checked my voter registration after I did it because I was so terrified that it went wrong and I wasn't going to be able to vote?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're a Native American woman. Like, they don't want your vote.
I was like, did it go through? Did it really go through?
Tennessee does not believe you should vote. Nonpartisan third-party commissions to determine what districts should be, which is huge. I mean, it gets rid of gerrymandering and redlining and actually makes districts representative of the population in that immediate area. This thing needs to pass. The House passed it. Come on, Senate.
Yeah, but we all know it's going to die in the Senate, which is like the most depressing thing in the wide world. Because you know what the Senate's going to do?
They're going to buster the fill.
They're going to buster that fill real hard.
And unfortunately, that's exactly what's going to happen. It's going to get to the Senate and they're going to filibuster the hell out of it.
Which is why we should get rid of the filibuster. Joe Manson, Why do you still like this stupid rule? Would you just get on one side, please? Stop being such a centrist. You are on the Democratic Party. Be a Democrat and hate the filibuster.
Well, you know, he's not the only one. I mean, my favorite U.S. Senator, Kristen Sinema, she's a big fan of the filibuster as well. You know, I'm all for that by representation in U.S. government. So I got to stay with her with every absolute garbage, awful decision she makes. Hey, it's representation. I'm gonna stick with it, even though she doesn't actually do jack shit for anybody other than her donor class.
Maybe we should start donating so she'll actually listen to us.
I don't want to give her a penny. I would let you brand an elephant on me than give money to Sinema's campaign.
You all heard this. The internet heard this.
And that's what sucks, is we have this awesome thing that will make voting accessible, make it easy, and make it fair. And one party is going to have 50 votes right against it. There's not going to be a single defector for it whatsoever.
Well, no, because we saw what happens if you defect and you vote against the Trump agenda. You get all your roles taken away.
Yeah, you get censored by your party for not being part of a death cult that's just coughing into each other's mouths. And
gross.
And even within the other party, not everyone wants to make voting accessible. Exactly like when we were talking when Jonathan was on in our last episode. I mean, the way that our government is structured right now, with two parties, you don't get a viable third party, or it gets absorbed into the major two parties. And so nothing actually changes, or very little changes at a snail's pace at that.
I think the thing that just like upsets me the most is the fact that the Voting Rights Act actually protects everyone. It protects your right to democracy. But the Republicans that are currently voted in and are still supporting Trump do not want you to be able to perform democracy. It's obvious, because that's what January 6th was all about. They didn't want democracy to happen. And there's people out there that actually believe that Trump won and he's just waiting it out because he doesn't want a civil war.
You know, he's pretty conflict averse. I mean, he's a little... I'm going to do a gendered. He's a little bitch. I mean, just look at what he did when he was doing his rally down in Alabama. The moment he got booed for saying he got the vaccine, he backpedaled.
That's true.
You guys will have your freedom. That's okay. You got to have your freedom. I got the shot, but hey, you got to have your freedom, and that's okay. I like that. The dude is an absolute coward. He likes the idea. He probably absolutely loves the idea of a civil war.
Well, yeah, because you know what the point of a war is? There are two sides of it. You are one of it, and the other person is the other part of it. And guess what? They're not going to hold back when they come for you.
And then you run the risk of being a loser.
You get to yell at people for years on TV that they're fired and with no repercussions. Of course, you're not going to want to be able to like do anything and have repercussions come back at you.
We won't have to worry about that if we just pass the fucking Voting Rights Act, part two. The 2021 redux of it. Just pass the bill, make districts fair, make it easier for everyone to vote, give felons the right to vote again because they're paying taxes. No taxation without representation. Let people have their fucking voice. Otherwise, you're just a fascist light.
You're just as bad as Russia. You get to be Russia then. I think really like my biggest concern is like, why aren't people calling their representatives and saying, hey, dumbass, you should listen and you should vote yes. Because you know what my favorite thing about democracy is that your representatives have to listen to you and you get to force them to listen to you. So you know what? You can call Marsha Blackburn and make her listen to your voice.
I mean, I don't think she'll actually listen. I think I don't think there's a lot up there to process stuff.
But at least you get to say that Marsha Blackburn's poor intern had to listen to all of your rants. So
you can make that AIDS life a living hell. Which, if you're, you know, interning for Marsha Blackburn, you, just like Spencer from the cover of the Nirvana album, deserve to have your life a living hell.
Aw, that poor Dade.
Well, maybe enough people berating them will make them rethink their life choices.
I wonder how many AIDS Marsha Blackburn has actually gone through.
Yeah, way too many. Probably not enough. They probably like worship the ground she walks on. I see her as kind of being the type of person that like points on the ground when there's a puddle and just forces her AIDS to lay down in it. And as she walks across the peasantry.
That makes me think of one of my favorite Parks and Rec episodes where Andy is giving out piggyback rides and Leslie Knope runs into one of the city council guys. She tries to talk to him at the same time. She's getting a piggyback ride from Andy.
Anyway, we're going to take a quick break and just marinate on how much Marsha Blackburn does not give back each year. And when we come back, we just have a few people that could really just use a bless your heart. When it comes to shady political funding, no one does it better than Charles Koch and the Koch Web. That's why so many awful things always seem to happen. Even with real support from grassroots organizations, the Koch Web knows how to spend their nearly infinite resources to make sure that that support is crushed immediately. Charles Koch, why would I let democracy actually function? Thank you for tuning in so far. And before we close out for today, we have a few people that could just really use a good old bless your heart.
It's Bless Your Heart with Bobby June.
Hello, hello. Oh my, you little angels. Look at you, just so wonderful. Thank you. And bless your heart.
Bless your heart.
There's a lot going on in the world, and these people are having a really rough time. So from here at Pod at the South, we just want to extend a bless your heart to help you out. Maggie, who needs a good old bless your heart from you?
So Fulton High School here in Knox County had an incident the other day, which you can find out about on TikTok. It's everywhere currently. They're trying to get it taken down, of course, because of the legal issues that are happening with it. But essentially what happened was one of the principals at Fulton High School found out that a trans student was not using the gendered bathroom for the assigned gender at birth that they were given. They were using their, you know, preferred gendered bathroom, and went ahead and locked them. I can't remember if it was in the bathroom or in the classroom. And for those of you that are not familiar with Knox County school systems, every single county school system has a county officer on campus at all times anyways. But this principal went ahead and called the cops on this trans student. Mind you, this trans student is a person of color. I believe this trans student was Black. And I can't remember the principal's name that called the cops on this student. But after we had a pretty bad issue with a shooting in one of our other Knox County schools that had to do with cops and a Black student, I don't think you should be calling the cops on any of your students. I think you should be sitting down with a counselor and having a conversation with your students. I think you should be protecting your students. I think you should just stop being a TERF. And I think you should educate yourself on what it means to be a trans kid in high school, because obviously you're not thinking about that. So bless your heart, okay? Just bless your heart. For all of you that know of some really good organizations that do trans youth work in the South, please send me those organizations over Twitter or Instagram so that I can give them all the help that they need. And send those organizations to Fulton High School so that they can do some of the work that needs to be done there to help with all those TERFs that are in their school.
I mean, went into it when Saxon was on, like, if you want to help trans youth, like, let them be the person that they want to be. And that should be your number one goal as an educator.
Your number one goal should not be calling the cops on your students ever. As an educator, especially to endangered youth. A lot of Fulton High School are refugees. A lot of them don't speak English. They have English classes there so that people can learn how to speak English. English isn't their first language. But sure, you want to call the cops on one trans student and their friends. Like, I really hope that you know that, like, every single time a kid drops out of high school that is trans or is a person of color, and you have singled them out in some way, form, or fashion in the past, or treated them differently than white students in some way, form, or fashion, and they drop out, that's your fault. You impacted their life so much that they had to leave that school. It's not like they get a chance to go to a different school. So yeah, bless your heart. You done fucked up. Who's your bless your heart this week?
Mine goes out to, you know, earlier we kind of talked about, you know, there's people in the Senate on both sides of the aisle that are just pretty garbage. And mine is going on to Senator Dianne Feinstein, who listeners of the pod will know I'm not a big fan of already. I mean, she's old as shit, and I am a firm believer that, you know, you've kind of reached the point where you need to retire to enjoy time with your family. And it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that her aides have come forward and said her dementia is getting so bad she can't remember when they brief her, and then she yells at them for not briefing her on certain topics. It has absolutely nothing to do with that whatsoever. My issue with Dianne Feinstein and why she needs a just good old bless your heart is her latest attempt to keep the war in Afghanistan going strong. Over the summer, she introduced a bipartisan bill called the Protect Women's and Girls' Rights in Afghanistan Act. And basically what it would do is it would further increase, so the withdrawal was already in progress, it had already been negotiated. But instead of going through with the withdrawal, it would have increased the U.S.'s military presence to protect Afghani women and girls who very much are at risk due to the Taliban regime that has taken over. But you know the best way, the best thing we could do if we really wanted to protect Afghani women and girls?
Except for refugees?
Exactly. Open up the fucking borders and let them in.
I think the thing that bugs me the most about like these, they're like, okay, well, we need to protect the women and children. Okay, cool. Can they become refugees? I mean, yeah, I guess so. Are you going to treat them just like everyone else? Probably not.
We needed to get out of Afghanistan. We needed to build infrastructure so we could get out without shit hitting the fan like it did. But since we didn't do that and shit did hit the fan so royally, that we allowed a terrorist regime to come in almost immediately, we need to seriously evaluate how many people's lives are going to be impacted. And every single one of them, man, woman, child, boy, girl, needs to be allowed refugee asylum in the United States. We are the sole factor on why they have to flee their country. We cannot turn our backs to them. We have to open it up and let them come here if we are serious about protecting these people. Cannot turn our backs on them. And bullshit attempts like this by Senator Feinstein and Joni Ernst of Iowa are just awful, awful attempts to further increase the U.S. presence overseas, further U.S. colonialism and imperialism, and drive us even more into debt over the never-ending war, the infinite war. So, Senator Feinstein and Joni Ernst, bless your hearts. You just want to keep the war going, and I salute you for that effort. Well, that'll do it for us today, everybody. Again, say it all the time. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate everything. Maggie, do you have an internet home for people to find you?
I do. I have a Twitter and an Instagram. And guess what, guys? I just got new war paint. So I'm going to be doing some new Facebook looks thanks to Prados Beauty, who's an indigenous Navajo beauty company. And they're amazing. They just came out with the second palette. So you can go check me out on Instagram and Twitter at Lil Miss Knit, LilMissKnit. And please, please, please tweet or DM me all of your Southern trans-inclusive nonprofits that I can hype up, because my job selects one beer tender that they want to highlight for a month. And then that beer tender gets to choose a beer that, like, for every beer sold, they get $1 donation. And I really want my nonprofit to either be gay as hell or indigenous. So please help me in making this place a little bit gayer and a little bit more native.
You be the nonprofit.
Can you just give me the money?
You can find me on Twitter at Graham851. Also, be sure to follow the podcast at pod_south. And afterwards, be sure to subscribe to us and leave us those sweet, sweet five-star reviews as they help others discover us and hear the sweet siren songs of Appalachian leftists.
And even if you don't like what we say, just leave a five-star review anyways and then comment about how much you hate us.
Everybody, thank you so much. Have a great night.
Bye.
Hot pot of the South, not your daddy's Appalachia. Hot pot of the South, progress cannot wait.